Are you ready? Ready to release internal pain? To find confidence, clarity, and direction for your future? To live a life of meaning, fulfillment, and contribution? To trust your intuition again, but something's been holding you back? You've come to the right place. Welcome. I'm Ian Hawkins, the host and founder of the Grief Code podcast. Together, let's heal your unresolved or unknown grief by unlocking your grief code. As you tune in to each episode, you will receive insight into your own grief, how to eliminate it, and what to do next. Before we start, I have one request. If any new insights or awareness land with you during this episode, please send me an email at info@ianhawkinscoaching.com and let me know what you found. I know the power of this work, and I love to hear the impact these conversations have. Okay, let's get into it. Welcome, everyone. Something a little different today. Had a shortage of guests, or actually I should say everyone's signing up to record in the next few weeks, so it'll be a busy few weeks then, but needed to fill a space, and I thought who better to speak to than Capriel Rickard. Capriel, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Now, we've chatted a lot over the years around business and what's working and what's not, and I thought given there's plenty of people who are not doing well at the moment, and it'd be good to jump on and chat to you about what you see that's working, what you see that's not working, and what you've identified that used to work that's no longer working. But also just whatever comes up around business and life, and we all know that business is not just about business, it's about what's going on the periphery. So that was a long intro, but welcome. How are you going?
I'm good. Cool. All right. So I guess probably for me, I would start with what I've seen that used to work that no longer works. That's probably the space I think that you and I sort of sit in the most. I've got, you know, quite a few clients that come to me that have, you know, sort of done everything. You know, they've learnt this or that or whatever else, like this strategy because somebody taught this or that strategy because somebody taught them that. Yep. And while I agree with all of those programs and I agree with, you know, all of the things that people are teaching because it has worked for them, and I'm a big believer that we have to get the results to be able to teach what we teach, right? Yep. So I think that they're great, but I think, well, I get that we're missing the ability to no longer make it a cookie cutter process and to actually adapt and be flexible to the people that we're serving or that we're helping. So I think that's one of the major things is, you know, we can sort of do all of the marketing or put together all of the programs or do all of the things, but none of it is going to work unless it actually is aligned with who we are and what we're meant to be here for. Yeah. So I find that you know, we can get that massive shift in people when, you know, when we can actually find out or dive into what's actually going on for them. What do they actually want to deliver instead of what they've been told by somebody that, you know, would be a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think about all of the different programs I've done over the years and got heaps out of them, but didn't actually get what I really, well, I probably got exactly what I needed out of them, but not what I what I wanted.
Yeah.
And not what I specifically needed for me, because they were very much a, here's a system, here's a process, this works. And then when it doesn't work, then you're left going, oh, what did I do wrong? Must be me. Yeah. Like I must be no good at this or something.
Exactly. I remember having that thought, hey, like when in the program where we met and going through that, and initially I wasn't getting the results that we were supposed to be getting. Yeah. And I remember just thinking, oh, crikey, this is terrible. I can't do this, you know. And at that stage, like most people, I'd invested everything that we had in savings to get into it in the first place. Yep. And so I was in that real lack, you know, I can't do it. I don't know. I have to do it. And I was in that real push energy, like, you know, I've got to get it done. And I remember thinking to myself, because I was still doing, you know, hundreds of hours, even though I had gone out, you know, on my own. Yep. And in the end, you know, like obviously I worked in the energy of what, you know, what we were doing. So in the program taught us the strategy that was working at the time, which is, doesn't necessarily work now. It depends. It, you know, there's a little bit of tweaking that has to go with that. The yep. concept per se still works, but there's, you know, people are bombarded. And this is the thing, they get bombarded with a particular system or process, so then it changes because people become complacent and then don't react the way that we would think that they would. And that's why you do these and then they don't work and you're like, what's wrong with me? It's
yeah, yeah.
all those other people.
Yeah, people don't react how they're meant to react. And it's like, well, no, because we're all different and you can have 100 people go through that it worked for a certain yep. type of personality or makeup or whatever,
yep.
but it just doesn't work for everyone. And actually thinking about it, how many people in that group got frustrated because exactly what you described, they're like, why won't this work? And yet there was a few of us that actually made it work, and mainly because we were connecting with each other and
yeah.
having different conversations and tweaking what needed to be tweaked to make it work. And to me, it's no coincidence that the four of us that did that have continued to get great results as a result of that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that a lot of, you know, a lot of marketing strategies and things like that, they deal in the logical or the psychology of buying, but they often don't bring in the energy that brings. And when I talk about alignment, what I mean is when I first, like the process, you know, what it was, put a post out and you get so many people put their hands up and then, you know, you go on from there. And I won't go into the whole process, but essentially I was one of the ones that I would, you know, put my post out, and I had that intention and that knowing that I would have 100 plus people put their hands up. And I had that every single time once I aligned with what I was doing. So my issue for me was that I didn't truly believe what I was saying. So when I was posting, I didn't truly believe it. So people were feeling that. So then yep. I wouldn't get the hands up.
Now, we're talking specifically around a particular type of business and using social media, but this is across every part of business, right? If you're not operating in a way and talking in a way and interacting in a way that's true to you,
yep.
then you're going to keep facing these different challenges.
Yeah.
And they might come back in different forms, but they'll just keep repeating and you'll wonder why you can't get it fixed, right?
Yeah. And another example of that is when I was running a construction company, I did a corporate alignment, right? So I aligned the values of myself and I got all of the crew before it expanded to align with that. So when we had new people come in, they aligned with the same core values of that company. Now, at the time, what I didn't realize, but I do now, is that once I was moved out of management, the business couldn't work because it was aligned to me, my energy and my values. Yeah, and not right. to the person that was taking over. Now, even though I thought they were the same, they were very, very clearly different because it didn't take long before, you know, the business no longer worked once I was not in there and somebody else was. Now, had I have done another corporate alignment based on that person that was running it, it would have worked. It would have been fine. But it wasn't aligned.
Tell us a little bit more about the corporate alignment. So for the people who are listening, whether this is if you're aligning in a small business from the owner down to your five staff or for something much bigger, tell us a little bit about what that actually looks and feels like. Because I know plenty of businesses have done maybe a values piece or they've done some sort of training and it gives a spike. This is what usually people experience. It gives them a spike and everyone's all happy. But then within a month or two or three or six, then people have just reverted back to those old behaviors.
Yeah, so it's kind of like living by the way that you want the business to be run and the way you want the business to be perceived. And the issue is that, like I said, we can do a corporate alignment, so we can establish the core values or rules of the business to be able to be run a particular way. So for my business, our very first and core value is it's family first always. And I've always run like that, right?
Yep.
And so for anyone that comes in and works with my business, that is their one of their core values. Now, it doesn't have to be their top value like ours, but it will be one of their core values. So when you create the rules, when you establish what that is, it's actually driven by the person that owns the business.
Yep.
And when we don't do it with the person that owns the business, like what happened with mine, it throws it out should the manager change or should, you know, the people change, right?
Yeah.
And so if we don't start at the very top and work our way down with that alignment and making sure that we profile and identify who the people are and where they fit in our talent pool, we don't actually get the running, the effectiveness of even doing a values piece. So people can do a values piece and they do it because they think they should, but when they don't do it correctly and when they do it in a very, oh, well, we think this is a good idea because, you know, such and such business also has that.
Yeah, right. So keep going.
No, I was going to say it's very much like a big brainstorming session. So the way I do it is actually get in there with the owner first and foremost. And if there's two, you have them both in the same room so that you can get that piece done. And it's asking all of the questions and getting down into the nitty gritty and getting emptying their cup out, because there's often things that we think we should have in our values and then there's stuff that we feel we should have.
Yeah.
And most people miss the feel, which is actually how we manifest and create. So if we miss the feel, we miss the whole bloody thing.
Yeah, right. It makes me think that it's similar to what happens at a personal level. It's if you're operating on this is how I want my life to be, this is the results I want to get based on what you think other people think you should do, based on what society thinks, based on fitting into the box so, you know, you're not putting your head too far above and risk getting it cut off. Mm. It's just, it's a safe place and it's just ticking boxes. It's not actually going to get you the results that you really want.
No. Yep. Never will. And it won't, because it doesn't feel good. And I mean, that it seems so simple, but if it doesn't feel good, then we shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, and that makes me think of what I learned, I can't remember how long ago, but every action that we take, every action that anyone who's listening to this takes, anyone in your life who maybe does some things that you don't necessarily agree with, they are taking that action based on the thought that it will make them feel better.
Yes.
So even those people who act out awful crimes and whatever else, because of whatever pain they're experiencing, their belief is that that will have them feel better. Now, maybe if you're listening going, oh, I don't believe in that, maybe not at a conscious level. Of course, at a conscious level, there are different things happening. But at an unconscious level, there is a drive to feel better. It's a natural human reaction. It's like even all of the dramas we've been through in the last 3 years, people talking about all the potential, you know, uncertainties of the future. Ultimately, humans have a desire to improve things and to be better, and things will continue to do that. But if we come back to personal and business, if we're not operating in a way that is going to be beneficial to us, might feel better short term, but if it's not going to be long term beneficial, if it's not going to actually be beneficial to the most important people around us and for the people who are involved in our business, whether that's people working for us or clients, well, then just going to be running around in circles again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like saying, you know, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm a high functioning alcoholic. So you drink because you want to feel better. You want to fix it. You want to, you know, be able to cope with whatever is going on. So you have processes and systems for coping with what's happening. But if it's ultimately at the back end of that, the downward spiral happens because it's not the right system or process for your particular business. You know, so whether it's attracting clients or it's, you know, putting a system in place to nurture those potential clients, if it's, you know, identifying who your customer is that, you know, wants to buy from you, whatever it is that you're selling, all of those things need to come down to and understand what is it that I'm fulfilling and what is it that they are fulfilling. And when we understand that, then we can actually connect to them in a very different space compared to what we're taught in marketing, in like general marketing.
Yeah, and the other thing that comes to mind when you say that is if we're looking from a place.
Siri is talking.
Sorry, Siri. If we're doing it from a place of bringing our own previous moments of grief or trauma into that conversation, then it corrupts our thoughts and our actions as well, right? So it's, tell us a little bit about how important that is, not just for your own personal healing and growth journey, but for the healing and growth of the business as well.
Yeah. So what we often find is, like, an example is my business, right? So you've helped me go through and to heal a lot of trauma that has happened in not just the recent years, but like over the years, right? And so my business has changed because I have a different level of certainty in what it is that I deliver, how I deliver that, and what results I can actually get. Now, before that, I knew that I could get results because I was seeing it and I understood that something was happening, but I wasn't clear on exactly what that something was. And it wasn't until my trauma was lifted or healed that I was actually able to go, oh, that's theirs. I'm not projecting and I need to, you know, help them do X, Y, and Z, you know?
Yeah.
So whenever we have a shift, and I think this is important even when we're talking about corporate alignment can happen with the owner of the business, but if they have grief or trauma or something that is unhealed for them, then that is still shows within their value structure.
Yeah.
And this is why when you level up through the different levels, you get stuck at different points. You know, like some people get stuck at 10,000 a month, some people get stuck at 50, some at 100, you know, some at a million. Like there's different levels that you get stuck because there's different levels of grief that has to be healed in order for them to be able to move through that and allow that space to be able to be available.
Yeah, I love that. And so because I was going to reiterate, this is not about saying that we're healed, that everything's all gone and we're all 100%. It's yeah, like you said, the levels. So as we level up, there's a new layer to peel back. And I think for my audience in particular, sometimes there can be a fear around what that might look like. And so when we're talking trauma and grief, like 99.99% of what's going on for people is not some horrific event. Like, not to say that people don't, but don't have those in their past. But the people who are sitting there thinking, "Oh, I don't want to find out what might be there because I'm worried that it might be some horrible thing." It's like, no. These moments of grief are like someone said something when you were two, and your 2-year-old brain went, "Oh, that's not good. I'll deal with it this way." And we create this pattern that a 2-year-old creates, and then we still run that pattern when we're 30, 40, 50, and wondering why we can't change.
And the problem with that is when we're 2 or 3 or 4, you know, like when we're younger, because we take everything on like a sponge, we don't have our own critical thinking. They are the moments where when people say something to you, you actually feel what they feel. So their projection of what's actually happening. And then we take it on as if it's ours and decide and make a belief around that.
I love that.
Yeah, so it's unfortunate, but that's just that us being human, right? So it doesn't mean that the grief is like someone could have said, oh, you know, like I can't even think of anything at the moment.
Around emotions, right? Don't get upset.
Yeah. And it's actually a challenge as a parent. Like it's a challenge as a parent to not say that. Like I often have to stop myself, you know, like, cause I've got my youngest is, she's 8 now. But she's at that stage of learning how to think for herself. And so when she gets frustrated, she cries because she can't express herself. It's not because she's trying to be dramatic, even though she is very dramatic. but she's frustrated in herself, and she can't organize her thoughts herself. So she's struggling with that. Now, if I was parenting like I was, 18 years ago, I would have just blown up, stop that, stop being ridiculous. But that's not actually the case. So then she would have felt like she can't have emotions because I'm saying it's not okay, when that's absolutely not the truth.
Yep.
Now it's like, go on, take 5. I'd prefer you do that in another room, or I will leave. Which would you prefer? I don't have to sit there in amongst the crying and the drama that she has to process. And I'm there for her when she's ready to talk and to work through whatever it is. But it's generally a good 5 to 10 minutes that she has to cry it out. And I now have like a when we cry, I always am just, I reiterate by, oh, that's great, you're releasing.
Yeah, nice.
And they're like, what? Like, and so I've noticed that over time doing that, when I cry, they're like, oh, Mum, you're releasing. Yeah, I am. Yeah. And it's necessary because that's us as humans.
Yeah. And it's not just men, but predominantly men who still resist that urge that comes to cry, it will still show up. It will just show up in other ways, which is usually anger, frustration, or physical pain, or weight, or whatever else it is, right? So you don't have to, but just know that it comes with consequences.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a big thing to talk about, because ultimately it's a human process to cry.
Yeah.
And we stopped that because somebody at some point told us it wasn't okay. And who decided that?
Yep. Crazy. I couldn't say for sure, but like a few generations ago when they went through like wars and depressions, and they would have just, you just got to keep carrying on. Like, you haven't got time for that. Like, get on with it sort of energy. And yeah, it's probably part of, at a deeper level, part of our evolution as well, is that making it a necessity rather than an inconvenience.
Yeah. And if you're not comfortable crying in front of everyone, don't.
Yeah. Do it in your own time.
Go to the toilet. Do whatever you got to do.
Yeah.
It's like when I was quitting smoking and I was using tapping as part of the process to relieve the cravings, I remember, it would come to, smoko time, and I would instead just go to the toilet first and I'd tap because, I was too embarrassed back then to do anything in front of anyone.
Yeah.
So I would tap and until the craving was gone, so that then I could go out and have morning tea and not want to have the cigarette. And for me, that was necessary. It gave me the space. Yes, I was in the toilet tapping like a, crazy woman, but it got me through,
So for people who are listening to that going, yeah, but that's not practical, I haven't got time to do that, like, what do I do?
Who questions bodily functions?
Yeah, but it's the idea of like, but that's not what I'm really going to do, right? Like, whether it's people feeling like it's not this or it's not that or whatever.
I know,
but this is the thing. Like, so people, like, what's the conversation to be having with someone, to have with themselves when they, because it's like people are self-judging constantly.
Yeah.
And like, I can't do that. People might think this, well, what if they catch me, or what if this, or what if that? And we create this whole story in our head. So how do we keep ourselves on track for what's most important to us when things unfolding are perhaps taking us, just even like you said, they're the day-to-day ceremonial activities that we have, whether it's smoking, getting your coffee, anything. Like, what's the best thought process or operational tool to help people just focus on them?
So if you are someone that doesn't have the ability to take that break, do that thing in the moment, my next suggestion would be carry a little book. And I always tell people to carry, you know, like one of those little notepads, you know, for men that sits in that top pocket, and note it down. Note down the thought that came up that made you feel like you wanted to cry. Note it down. Let it go until you have that space to be able to do that. And whether that's, you know, everyone's gone to bed at night or first thing in the morning, the next morning, wherever that is. The thing is that if we don't put ourselves first, nobody else is going to.
Yeah. Which seems obvious, right? But these habits run deep. Actually, that's something I wanted to ask you about. Even when because more and more people are open to different modalities to move past different behavior patterns. One of the things that's really shown up in a big way for me and the strategies you've given me have been so helpful to help me move past this is it's all well and good to change the behavior, but if you can't change the habit and make it stick, then you just default back to what's been. So the trauma response is not there. The grief response is not there, but the habit is so hardwired. So if people are in that place, they can't get their habit to stick, or they can't even get their head around changing it, like, where do they turn? What's the first step they take?
For changing the habit?
Yeah, to embed a new habit.
Yeah, I think that firstly we need to understand that at an unconscious level we can, you know, use a modality, heal it instantly and it's gone. But then at a conscious level, our conscious thinking is still running the same automatic behavior or the behavior that we know to be true to us in that moment.
Yep.
So being able to anchor in something else can take time, can take practice. And the biggest thing is to allow ourselves to practice a new way of doing things.
Love it.
So if it's, something that we, you know, is attached to our identity, it depends on how much of a stronghold that has. So when I say attached to our identity, I mean, as the example, smoker, I'm a smoker. You know, that is an identity. You know, for lots of people, it's, you know, I'm a CEO. You know, I'm a business owner, I'm a whatever it might be, right? So it's attached to their identity of who they are. They've given themselves a label of what that is. The first thing is to understand that a label is just a label is just a label. The weight that we put on it or how stringent it must be is the belief system within ourselves. So allowing ourselves the space to create a new identity or a new way of doing something is important to practice little by little, and know that when we rewire the brain, through the repetition, that is what actually grounds in a new way of existing. And when I say grounding in, I mean it's things like, say, for instance, you want to become a millionaire. It's identifying that the decisions that we make in the now moment, because that is the only space that we have control over. We can't change the past and we don't have any control over the future until we make a decision in the now moment. So in the now, when we make a decision that we're going to be whatever it might be, if it's, you know, I want to be a millionaire, then it's making decisions now that you would make as that millionaire, because now is the residual of all the past decisions and choices. So it's understanding that, being present in the moment and asking the question, what would my millionaire self, you know, answer to this? What would I do? That gives us the ability to make new decisions based on where we want to be. And if we are doing things where we're removing a habit or a behavior that we've done, so for instance, with smoking, it's like what would the non-smoking self be? And even further to that, if you make it, you know, a couple of steps away, it's easier to self-identify with a new being. So instead of I'm a non-smoker, it's I'm Capriel Rickard.
Mm.
So
really good. What,
yeah. Sorry.
And no, I was just going to say, like, it makes me think of what I've been hearing recently, like people who are sports people who like have come off the end of their career and they're like, well, what is my identity? Who am I if I'm not the footballer? Oh, now I'm an ex-footballer. And it's more of the same, except without the fulfillment. And that's what often keeps people stuck in, whether it's a sport or like playing on too long, or whether it's in a relationship or a pattern of behavior. It's because, well, what will life be like after that? It's the uncertainty around that. But you have to be able to go past that to see what is on the other side. And it might feel a little bit awkward through the moment, but it's always going to take you to a better place.
Absolutely. And I think that the first step in identifying that is to ask the question, if money and time were no issue, what is it I would truly want to be doing right now? And when we can answer that, and when we can sit with that and actually answer what that is, then we no longer have to be the ex-footballer, ex-cricketer, ex-whatever. We're not the ex-anything. We're whatever it is we're looking to go forward to.
Yeah, I love that. It's like Steve Jobs' quote, like every day got up going, well, if this is my last day, what would I do? Now, there are some practical things that we still need to do, knowing that it's not our last day, but it's like, well, how would you be investing that time? Like what energy would you be bringing? What sort of people would you be connecting with? Yeah, spot on. You mentioned something there that I think is really powerful, is it's practice. So when you change a habit, it takes some practice. So I think there have been probably too many people thinking that there's a magic solution that's just going to, I'm just going to either flick a switch or I'm going to take this and it's going to make it all better. But you can heal and you can create a new way of thinking, a new conscious and unconscious belief, but you've got to do the practice. You've got to have.
Yeah, but allowing yourself the time to practice.
Okay, that's a really good space, because how often as parents, business owners, if we have a job where other people depend on us, do we put that at the forefront? So could you tell us a story about how that was the case for you and how you were able to shift that way of being?
So I'm just trying to think of what the best example of that would be. I think that as a mother, we, and whether it's a mum or a dad, to be honest, it actually doesn't matter what gender you are. The minute you become a parent is the minute it's like we flick that switch and decide that we are no longer important and that they are the most important thing to us.
Yeah.
And that's a really dysfunctional way of thinking. And it's dysfunctional for a couple of reasons. It's dysfunctional because we cannot be the best parent that we can be unless we are fulfilled ourselves. That's the first one. And secondly, when we put them first, we live our life through their eyes, and then we project on them all of the things that were unfulfilled in us to them. Yeah. And we've spoken about that lots.
Yeah. Making their journey about us, and even people who think they're not, like, and again, we've both been guilty of that. Yeah. It turns out that we're still trying to push our own agenda based on our own experiences onto them, and that's a constant work in progress and requires practice as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't matter whether you've got 1, 3, or 10 children, you literally have to allow yourself the space to practice it with each one, because it shows up differently for each one of them.
Yeah, actually, great. Sorry, you're going to say something else, Ed?
No, you're right. You go.
I was going to say, it's a great point is your children are pretty good at picking up when you do things that don't seem equal and fair. And it took me a long time to work out that, yeah, actually, I do treat you different because you're different, and you need to be treated different because you've got different needs and different wants, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You're never going to get exact equality. I think that's probably a whole other conversation. But there's this desire for equality across all of these different areas, and it's like it's not, while we are unique and different, that's just not possible.
No.
So just come back to that unhealthy comparison space.
Yeah, and that's through, you know, things should be fair. You know, we're taught that things should be fair. And as a parent, we question ourselves, oh, I'm being unfair. You know, I'm not treating them the same. You know, they haven't had equal amounts of the drink that they want, or that, you know, like they've, you know, one's got the wrong color cup, and it starts really early. And, yep. You know, like it goes all the way through. And I remember having all of those arguments with my siblings. And, you know, my life was completely unfair. My little sister got absolutely everything. And albeit she probably did, at the end of the day, because I was stronger, I didn't need the same thing she needed.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm okay with that now. But at the time, I didn't understand what that was. So then with my children, I'm like, yeah, well, it is different. You know, like my eldest is has a different dad to the other two. And she was always talking about how things were unfair and all of those things. And what we've now realized that, you know, there's been a lot of trauma that has come out that we had no idea about. I was busy my entire life trying to make her feel like she was needed and wanted, and that had nothing to do with anything I was doing.
Yeah.
And right. I was constantly kicking myself, telling myself I was a bad parent. You know, I just don't know how to do this. Why would the universe even allow me to have children was the question most of the time.
You're right. You know,
but I was just like, why am I even here doing this? And my whole life was revolving around keeping my husband happy, keeping my children happy. And it didn't matter what I did, I couldn't keep them happy until I realized it wasn't them that was unhappy, it was me.
Yeah, I can relate to that one.
Yeah. So then I'm like, oh, whoa, hold on a minute. I'm in charge of my happiness. I take back that responsibility. And so then I started putting myself first. And that took adjusting, you know, because for all of those years, I had put everybody else first. You know, my family was before that, you know, my siblings and my mum and all of those things. You know, I did everything I could for them because that was my job, right? You know, I was supposed to be the good daughter.
Yeah.
You know, and once I started putting myself first, everyone's like, whoa, 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 you're such a selfish bitch. Yeah. Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. Like, yeah, I put me first. And if you don't like it, then don't be in my space, because I expect you to put you first too. And that's the difference.
Yeah. And when we can connect from that space, then we're not bringing in all of the manipulation and agendas to try and get whatever it is we need getting met. We meet them ourselves, and it allows for a much more pleasant conversation and much more enjoyable connection, more unity, and less need to be trying to push for space and to be heard and to be seen.
Yeah. It's that external validation, isn't it? You know, like we as humans feel like we need to validate external to ourselves when we have that knowing of who we are, one, who what we expect of ourselves and what we expect or will accept of others. It's a very, very different space to be in.
Yeah,
absolutely. A lot of people can't handle it because they're still in the old paradigm of, you know, we should be doing everything for everyone else. And I think that comes across in business too. So like we have that, we, you know, you serve. And that's fine, whatever it feels good. But when it doesn't feel good, don't do it. You know, yeah. Like we have clients come to us all the time and are like, oh, you know, like I've learnt this strategy and yada, 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 but it doesn't feel good. And you're like, oh, well, that doesn't align. Let's look at what else you can do. And the minute they have that something else, their business is booming because they have something that they actually enjoy doing, first and foremost. And secondly, they're not just delivering on what they think they should have, and they're working with the people that they're drawn to, like that, doing that energy avatar. Oh my God, that's like game changer.
Yeah.
It, you know, your messaging isn't a problem. The way you deliver things are not a problem. Where you show up is not a problem. Like you just show up in the right spaces with the right message, doing the right thing. It's easy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so just for context, we were working on this a few months ago, and it's like, okay, we've been through all the different processes around what your ideal client looks like. And it's like, what if we just slowed down and actually were present and focused on our breath, not about all the noise and what we think the ideal client would should be, but just to allow enough space for them to present to us.
Yeah, and so, absolutely.
And so for those who are thinking, well, what does that all mean? Like, it sounds a little bit out there. Well, this is what our instincts, our intuition is capable when we allow it space. Like, you must, everyone must be, who's listening, must be identified with one time where they just thought, oh, I need a solution to that. And then the answer just popped into the head, or it turned around the next corner, or someone rang them and said, oh, here's this, or it popped up in their feed. And we can do this same thing around business. And in fact, that's one of, not one, it's probably the, outside of the personal stuff, that's probably the biggest thing you've taught me is to that's how I do business now. It's like, take enough time to tune in, get the answer. And when you follow that, it's like, oh, that was way too easy, but that's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I say, like, it feels like you're cheating. You're not. Yes. You're just doing it the right way.
Yeah, and it comes back to something I just wrote down there before. It's like people, whether it's as a parent, whether it's a business owner, a CEO, a manager, whatever, it's that validation, needing to have that met, needing to have that met. Well, what about if you didn't need to have that met? What would life look like if it didn't matter? I've talked to you before about like having parents congratulate me for something one of my children have done, and I'm like, well, thanks, but it's got nothing to do with me. They did all that. Like, I don't. Whereas that would have been different in the past, where I was very much in that, I've got to make sure my kids are the best, because then I'll look like XYZ, and it's like just garbage. And it keeps your poor children, it keeps them stuck and not able to find out who they are.
Yeah, and it limits who they can be and what they want to do. Like we have like we go through stages, you know, the kids, you know, my middle fella, his new thing is I want to be a YouTuber. Yeah, cool. That's cool. So what are you going to do? Let's get a plan together. And the minute I'm like, let's get a plan together, let's start it, he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on. I'm just going to jump on and play games. And I was like, oh, is that how it works? I was like, well, let's just get a little bit of an idea, you know, like what do people want to watch you do? And, you know, like I understand that that's how a lot of them sort of start. And it's the same with anything that we do in business. We start with an idea of that's what it is going to be. But when we then tweak that idea to align with who we truly are and what we truly want to deliver, then it's a whole different level, a whole different level. Like I remember when I first started coaching and I would only offer 6 sessions because I couldn't commit to anything more. Like, right. I don't know if I'm going to be stable enough. Like, you know, I was all over the shop mentally. I suffered from, you know, all of the things that were happening to me because at that stage I had no idea about my psychic abilities or energy or anything, right? So I was going in and I was like, I can't commit to any longer period of time because I don't know how I'm going to fix them past that. Like what am I going to do? Yeah. So whereas now I'm like literally putting together a 12-month program because I know that people normally work with me for 12 months. There's a reason and a purpose for it. It feels good. And I figure, why not? Like, yeah. That's what's showing up and that's what I'm enjoying and I'm loving being able to see the transformation and what they can create. So why not commit to that so that they have absolute certainty in what the outcome is?
Yeah, and if you think about like a bricks and mortar business, depend on repeat clients. When they need that particular product or service, they go back to the same place. Mm. So why not build something that gives them that option? There's always going to be people who come and get a small hit of whatever you've got and go off and do something else, and that's fine. And you create options for that. But there are other people who want to be part of it. Like, I'm sure you'd be the same. There'd be clients there that you've seen on and off or constantly for the last 4, 5, 6 years, and that's because they get it. And as you continue to go through your growth and expansion of you personally and your business, then there's always something else. And if we look back at the history of business, some of the biggest and best businesses have actually come in the toughest times because they've reinvented and changed, and it's the ones who didn't that have fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, and I think that in itself allows us space to know that it's okay to tweak and change.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of us think that, and particularly in like the coaching realm, oh, well, you know, I have to deliver just this one thing, or I have to do just this. And I mean, I've got programs that I created years ago that are still relevant now, depending on the client. You know, it depends on what their needs are. And instead of me having to reinvent the wheel or walk them through by themselves, I can literally direct them to the part in that program that, you know, is works for them. And I think that when we're, you know, in business and we get that real stagnant, I'm not enjoying it anymore. That is trigger for us to take a look at what's actually going on. You know, where else are we stagnant? Where else are we stuck? Where else are we feeling, you know, just overwhelmed? And often that can come from, you know, just that last, you know, the saying, the straw that broke the camel's back. You know, often we have that happen in our lives. And I haven't myself done a lot of coaching in the last couple of years because the healing has had to be so in depth. But I have absolutely still been working on myself and still been in the space. And I've been lucky enough to be able to have that space to be able to do, you know, all of the work on myself. But if business, I think that's what I'm trying to say. If business is not working or it doesn't feel fun anymore, there is something for you to explore to change that for yourself.
Yeah, and you've still been working. Yeah. Like you've contributed massive contribution to local community businesses,
yeah,
as a way of giving back because you're in a position that you can, which again is something that many of us would love to be able to do, right? So many people are going, oh, if I didn't, like you meant the question you asked before, if money and time was no issue, what would you do? Yeah. Well, how many people wait till retirement to do that giving back part? Well, what if you could actually set your business up that you could be doing that now?
Yeah, which is an interesting process in itself. You know, like I had told myself for years I wanted to do something, and I knew that I wanted to do something, but I couldn't work out what that something was. And I, you know, like I was always of the excuse, you know, I can't because my husband works away. I can't because I have the kids. I can't. And I was still, you know, drawn to be able to do something. Yep. So I got out of my own way and decided to do something because, you know, that was fulfilling for me to do. And I, you know, I had, you know, I wanted to be more social was why I really was craving to be more social and to be around people. And I felt like this was a really good way to do that. And, you know, what happened instead, because we're always in the place that we need to be, right? So, but what happened instead was it proved to me my abilities and what I can actually help people with. And so it got me unstuck from not wanting to serve because I was uncertain of my own ability.
Mm. So. That's a good little lead into something else I wanted to ask. You mentioned psychic abilities before. So yeah. I'd like to do this two ways. One is we'll go a little bit deep for those who are ready for the deep, but also maybe some context for people who are a bit like, I'm not sure if I believe in that. You've lost me, whatever, right?
Yeah.
To me, it comes back to that same thing that we were talking about earlier, which is when you allow yourself space and time and quiet and presence, then there's so much that the mind, the heart, and the soul is capable of that we don't know when we're rushing around on the next thing. So, again, I would ask everyone to have a think about the times where they've just known something's going to unfold. So whether you want to call it your own psychic abilities or how you want to look at it, but everyone would have an example where when they're in a good space, maybe they've been on holidays or they've just had a good day or whatever, and they just like, I just know this is going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
And so maybe some more context around some logic around it, and then maybe some deeper stuff around how people can access more of that. And what I love about this, if we come back to us, the parents, is being able to pass on this same information to our children to allow them to experience that knowing, so they're not in that anxious space of uncertainty and whatever. They know what they need to know, and that's all they need to know, and the certainty and the confidence and the peace of mind that that gives them. It's a beautiful thing. So, yeah, go.
Yeah, so for me, it didn't start as I had psychic ability. That was never where I was at. I always just backed myself in business. You know, I'd taken a business from, you know, 750,000 turnover annually to 4.5 million in less than 12 months. And I thought I was doing that because I was just good at my job.
Yeah.
But you probably were. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I had an amazing team because I'd done the corporate alignment and, you know, like I had all these people around me that were able to work with me and going for a common goal.
Yep.
But what I found was like the boys used to say to me, because it was construction, the boys used to say to me, like, how do you know that that's going to happen? Like, how do you know that's going to work out? And I'm like, I don't know. I just know.
Can I just pause you there for one sec? So there have been different times where I've worked with female coaches, male coaches, but having done a fair bit of work with you over the years, if anyone's got any doubt about Capriel's ability to operate with men, she worked, yeah, in construction with the blokiest blokes you could ever imagine. So, yes, there is a deeper understanding than perhaps sometimes I feel like I have about men at times, which is strange but also cool. So the knowing.
Yeah, yeah. So I just had this knowing, and the boys would always question, like, how do you know? I don't know. I just know. Just like, you know, and I put it down to just backing myself, you know, like I was just backing myself and I knew. But once I learnt about energy and intuition and how we actually get that information, then I was like, oh, whoa, hold on a minute. That's not what I was doing. Like I was literally getting the information or the drop in. And for me, it was happening. I would have a dream. So then when it presented, I would have a certainty in what decision I needed to make. But I wasn't consciously aware of that until I had someone that started taking me through the process. Well, that's your intuition. What's intuition? You know, and I started diving into that. In a very basic form, intuition is the gut feeling that we get or the physical response we get to any situation. And when we come back into ourselves and we are curious about what the response is physically, then we can utilize that information, that extra information that we have. It's like our sixth sense, right?
Yeah.
So once we have that, we then can say, okay, well, we've got that that ability to, you know, find out more. It's like, you know, the feeling when you walk into the room and you know you don't like somebody, you don't know why you don't like them until they open up their mouth and then it's confirms. Like, yeah, it confirms that it's done.
Yeah.
So it's that feeling, right? That's intuition. But that turns into psychic when we develop it.
It's like you're talking about before, when you practice something.
Yeah.
So that intuition is when people are getting this experience having done no practice with it whatsoever.
Correct.
Yeah. So the depth of it. So you've done a shitload of practice on it.
Yeah.
So give me a good example of where those psychic abilities have paid off in a big way.
Oh, okay. Well, let's go with the last one. And I think the guys might be here, so that might be pretty relevant. So we were supposed to buy a car. And the deal fell through. Like we had a car and it was approved, deal fell through. And then I just had this, I don't think we need to buy, and my husband, I don't think we need to buy a car. Just leave it. Like we'll get one later. Just leave it. Anyway, he's been looking and, you know, constantly. So for the last couple of months, he's been looking. And earlier this week, so he has, we've talked about wanting to be able to travel around Australia, you know, take the kids and off we go. And I keep saying to him, come on, let's just pack up and go. He's like, not yet, not yet. Anyway, he's talked about the way he wants to go around is, you know, have a ram ute, have the gooseneck attached to it, and that's how he wants to go around. Anyway, we've talked about that, and there was a one of those, I want to say lottery, but one of the groups
charity lottery.
Yeah, that's what they are. And these guys that he went with, because it was about children and it was about, you know, being able, like the profits went to kids. Yep. So he decided to become a member. More earlier this week, he literally got the call to say that he had won a $250,000 Ram. And I was just like, I told you we didn't need to buy a car.
I just love the message that you sent me. It was like, oh, yeah, by the way, we won a $250,000 car yesterday. I'm like, what? Like, surely that's a joke.
No, absolutely serious. Like, it's just mind-blowing that even though you know that it's going to happen and that something is going to happen, I think that is the biggest thing with having psychic ability, knowing and trusting and allowing it to show. The trusting and allowing it to show is where most people trip up.
Yeah. Because then they go, no, it's a load of crap because I thought this was going to happen. And well, I had one that I shared with you just recently. I'm like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
You know, and that's because you get caught in all these different things that just aren't relevant. And it's that resistance
And our expectation of how it's going to turn out. Mm. And when we know that it turns out for the highest good of everyone concerned and that, you know, all of these extra abilities and all of these things are literally so that we have all of that, you know, additional information available to us and we can operate from a higher vibration that allows everyone to live in harmony. And it's not about having to get that validation. You talked about earlier, you know, people that do bad things, they do it because they're looking to cope or to fulfill something within themselves because of whatever has happened to them. And that's absolute truth. But we get to decide what that is and we get to decide how we operate within that realm. You know, bad things can happen. And that doesn't mean that it wasn't supposed to happen. It just means that it's built us to do something more. You know, to have a bigger impact, to be able to help more people, to do whatever it is we actually came here to do. And I think for me, having psychic abilities has allowed me to have a greater trust in the way the world works, you know. And we've had some really bad shit happen and I won't go into it, but it's like a parent's worst nightmare. And once I could get past all of that grief, now life is just unfolding and rapidly.
Yeah.
Like rapidly.
Yeah. So cool. So two thoughts through that is a something I've referenced many times in this show before, I'm sure. Abraham Hicks talks about that concept you were talking about before. It's like we decide we want something. The world shows us feedback. We either go, I want more of that or I want less of that.
Yep.
And the universe says, very well, here's 1,000 ways that it could happen. And we say, yeah, but it has to be this way. Because we have this predetermined idea on how it has to be. Very well, it'll happen that way. And then we say, but it probably won't happen for me. There'll be probably something will happen. Very well, it will go away. So when you can remove those two thoughts of the process, you can have a desire.
Yeah.
Make whatever action you're called to, and then you can win a car. That easy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so don't start with the car. Start with something a bit easier. And even Abraham talks about that. Just say, what is it? Show me blue glass, feather, and a butterfly. Start with something like that, and just say, oh, I would like to see that today, and then watch it unfold. And the other thing.
That's one of the things that I actually teach people is how to identify what that is so that they know. Probably the biggest thing is if it's meant for us, it will always be.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And the other thing is that something that a coach taught me about 4 or 5 years ago is that when you can operate from that place of intuition and just allow the guidance to come through you, then you can stop trying to bring your ego to everything. Which is how good am I or how bad am I or I stuffed that up or, wow, I was amazing, which all it does is give you a false sense of where you're really at. Either you think you're going better than you are or you think you're going worse than you are. It just is. Instead, you can allow this guidance that is available to all of us to flow through and just do what's best for you and for them and for all. It's such a freeing place.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. So, as we said, it'll be intertwined, personal, business, everything in between.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you wanted to share before we finish up today?
I feel like that's a yes. I'm not quite sure what that is. I guess that the biggest message would be, if you're in business, want to get in business, have a concept idea, there's just something that you feel drawn to do, or if you're in business then it's not quite working for you, like you're a little bit stagnant, then there's something for you to tweak. There is something for you to look at. And it would be that first question is, if money and time was no issue, what would it be that I would be delivering or doing? And if that is in alignment with, you know, if it matches what you're delivering, then great. But if it doesn't match, then you need some help to identify what that is.
Yeah, often. Sorry, keep going.
No, you're all right.
I was going to say, it doesn't mean throwing out what you're doing now. It means how can you bring in what that is to what you're already doing. It's not people think they have to change their whole career or their whole business. No, it's just tweaking, as you said.
Yeah, it is absolutely about tweaking it. And, I mean, it's interesting because there's a lot of people stuck at the moment. There's a lot of people feeling just unhappy with where they're at. And it's not, you know, it's not huge amounts of, you know, unhappiness. Like they're still, you know, quite like what they're doing, but they know there's something more. Like I remember having that yearning for there has to be something more.
Yeah.
And there absolutely is.
Yes. And it's not as difficult as you think.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
So good. Now, you've mentioned a few of your programs and different stuff you've got going on. What's something you'd like to share with people that if they're interested, they can actually get a taste of straight away?
Okay. Well, that's actually a good question. I don't know what I want to share. There's so many.
The first thing that came to mind for me is your Facebook group, which is particularly for those who are a bit more spiritually minded or are curious and are asking those same questions that you said, there has to be something more.
Yeah.
Your group is a great place for people to start, where you share really basic and easy and quick, importantly, quick bits of snippets of guidance to help people get that. Yeah. Is that a good place to start?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good place to sort of find me. Or on Instagram, Instagram's my new favorite place to be at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying all the reels and things like that. So.
It wasn't lost on me when you were talking about your daughter who has a need to express herself. I'm like, oh, I wonder where she gets that from.
Yeah. I don't know. Let me think. Yes. So Instagram's probably a good place to find me as well. That's sort of where my concentration is at the moment, because I'm having fun doing all the little reels and things like that and just experimenting. And I've been blessed enough to be working with someone that's a major influencer. So that's, you know, been lots of fun to explore that. So, yeah.
Awesome. And we joked about the manifesting a car and all that sort of stuff. But really, if I think about what you've given me, it's got nothing to do with, well, nothing and everything to do with that sort of stuff. But it's more being the strategy and the process and the structure, which has just made all the difference. Because instead of now being lost and like, well, what do I do now?
Yeah.
The ability to either just go to the structure I already have, or how do I navigate that and go, okay, well, what is most important today? So for those who are a bit more than curious, just know that this is not fluffy. This is clear, direct, strategic coaching that's going to help you moving forward extremely quickly if that's what you're ready for.
Yes. But you've got to be ready.
You've got to be ready. Sure. Absolutely. Awesome. Yeah. Well,
all right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate you filling a hole. When I introduced that, I was like, well, it shouldn't be like you're just doing it because there's not someone there. We have talked about it in the past. Yeah. Haven't talked about it in the past, jumping back on and having this conversation.
Yeah.
So thank you for being able to do that at a short notice. It probably was a good excuse as any for us to actually make it happen.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your wisdom with our audience today.
That's all right. Thank you for having me. It's always fun.
You're welcome. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Grief Code podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Please share it with a friend or family member that you know would benefit from hearing it too. If you are truly ready to heal your unresolved or unknown grief, let's chat. Email me at info@ianhawkinscoaching.com. You can also stay connected with me by joining the Grief Code community at ianhawkinscoaching.com/thegriefcode. And remember, so that I can help even more people to heal, please subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.